Our next public hearing is subdivision 2013-4 Jack Lingo Asset Management LLC.
This is an application to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agriculture residential zoning district in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, dividing 108.75 acres into 69 lots in the environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone, being located northwesterly of Canary Creek subdivision.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, we're conducting a hearing here. I expect you to remain quiet. If you need to have a conversation, please do it out in the lobby. All right, Mr. Blank, go ahead.
Located northwesterly of Canary Creek subdivision, approximately 400 feet northwest of Park Road, and being identified on the tax rolls as tax map ID District 335, map 7, and being a part of parcel number 1. In this case, I would ask again Mr. Abbott if he had could summarize any comments we received on this application, any comments we received from the Technical Advisory Committee.
Mr. Chairman, this application was filed with the county on April 8th of 2013. When it was filed, the applicants also were considering annexation into the city of Lewis. On September 30th of this year, the applicants advised the county that they've withdrawn their request for annexation and advised us to proceed with this application. The Technical Advisory Committee report of June 14th, 2013 is a part of the record for this application. On December the 1st, the applicant submitted an exhibit booklet. Each of you has received a copy of that. It's been in the file since December 1st. It's a part of the record. We previously provided you with copies of an executive summary from the City of Lewis and an adopted resolution. To date, we've received one letter in support of this application. We've copied that. We'll pass them down for your reviews. That's a part of the record. And to date, we have received 17 letters or emails in opposition to this application. We've also copied those for your review, and they'll be a part of the record. And that's all I have, unless you would have any questions.
All right, sir, we thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on what Mr. Abbott said for the record as well, as part of the Technical Advisory Committee report, proposed restrictive covenants were submitted, reviewed by me, commented on by me, and revised restrictive covenants responding to my comments were also submitted, and those are part of the file as well.
Correct.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Chair recognizes Mr. Byard. On behalf of the applicant.
Thank you, Mr. Wheatley. Good evening, gentlemen. I'd like to say we'll be brief, but that's probably not the case, given the size of the project booklet. With me tonight to present the application, to do the heavy lifting, are Nick Hammonds from Jack Lingo Asset Management, and Ring Lardner from Davis Bowen and Friedel, the project designer and engineer. I'd like to give you a brief history of this property, covering the last 50 or so years. In 1965, this farm, and this is a 600-acre farm, was owned by the Ritter family. It was approached by Hercules Powder Company, offered a price, and the Ritter family in 1965 sold the property to Hercules Powder Company. For those of you who don't remember Hercules Powder Company, it was a Fortune 500 company. It dealt in manufacture of petrochemicals, fertilizers, and explosives. According to local folklore, Hercules intended to develop the farm as an industrial port site for shipping and receiving manufactured products in and out of the Delaware River and Delaware Bay. In response to Hercules' announced plans and Shell Oil's announced plans to create an oil refinery on the shores of the Delaware River in Newcastle County, the General Assembly took it upon itself to adopt the Coastal Zone Act in 1971. That act, as you all know, prohibited any new industrial development along Delaware's shore. Hercules took a deep breath, conveyed the property to its real estate holding company, East Bay Realty. And East Bay Realty owned the property until 1992, when it sold the property to Sussex County Council. If you remember, in 1991, the Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control put into place a moratorium on any septic permits in the Inland Bays area, leading all the way out Route 1 to Five Points. In response, the county decided to go into the sewer business. However, before the county settled on this property, it required East Bay to obtain an easement so that this portion of the property, where this planned subdivision is, has access. East Bay negotiated with the University of Delaware and acquired a 50-foot easement. And with that, Sussex County Council settled on the purchase of the property. Sometime after settlement, the county decided to conduct some soil tests on the site, because the plan for the site was as a regional wastewater treatment facility and a spray irrigation facility. Sad to say, the soil test flunked. The property was not susceptible to accepting treated wastewater effluent via spray irrigation. As a result, the county sold the property in 1994 to J.G. Townsend, who has owned it and farmed it since. The only constant throughout all of this is that the same Ritter family who sold the property in 1965 continues to farm it. They are the tenant farmer. But we've come a long way from an industrial port facility to a regional wastewater treatment facility to a 69-lot residential subdivision. With that, I'd ask Nick Hammonds to come up and to introduce himself.
Good evening, Nick Hammonds, Jack Lingo Asset Management.
Nick, if you could you take the commission on a quick tour around the area of this property?
Sure. As you can see, the subject property is located here, Harbor Point, 69.
Excuse me, just for a second. Ladies and gentlemen, there are exhibits up here being shown that have been tilted toward us for our benefit, and unfortunately, they're tilted away from you. There are another board over here, but you're quite far away from them. So if you would like to get up and take a closer look, walk right up there, take a look at it, please feel free to do so at any time. I just ask you to not have any conversation while you're there so that we can focus on what's being said over here. Okay, thank you.
Sure. So as I said, the Harbor Point proposed project sits here, 69 lots clustered on about 35 acres of uplands. The balance of the 108 acres that are mentioned in the application are in green here, the wetlands that surround the property and Canary Creek snakes along here. The Canary Creek subdivision, as you head southeast, is a 102-unit subdivision with a mixture of townhomes and roughly eighth of an acre small single-family lots. As you head out to one of the main roads, New Road, which heads in a southwesterly direction towards Route 1, if you were coming out of the project via Park Road, you have the reserve at Pilottown right here, roughly quarter to a third acre lots, Pilottown Park here to the east. As you head further north, you have the University of Delaware campus and Roosevelt Inlet, and then the Delaware Bay. The other major road in the area is Pilottown Road, which heads in a southeast direction towards the town of Lewis and Savannah Road.
Thanks, Nick. Could you give the commission, as briefly as you can, a history of this project from April 2013 to the present?
Sure. As Mr. Abbott said earlier, we originally submitted our preliminary plan to this body in April of 2013, which is roughly the same plan that you have before you this evening. The thought at that time was to go through the county approval process and ultimately tie into City of Lewis Board of Public Works utilities, which were stubbed to the property line when the Canary Creek subdivision was developed and were sized in anticipation of development of the subject property that we're discussing this evening. During our initial discussions with the city about utility service. We were strongly encouraged, specifically by the mayor and deputy mayor at the time, to submit the plan to the city's land use process. We did have quite a bit of apprehension about that, looking at specifically the Canary Creek land use process, which took upwards of 8 years, and the Angler's Nest land use process, which was about the same time frame. But we're given some certainty, not in writing or a written timeline, but that the process could run its course in about 2 years, annexation through final subdivision approval. So after much thought, we did decide to put our application on hold with Sussex County and sign a pre-annexation agreement to move forward with the city. The first part of the process in the city was annexation subcommittee meetings, which were multiple meetings over several months, and we did receive a favorable recommendation from those annexation subcommittees. Our preliminary plan went in then, and ultimately at the end of 18 months and more than 20 meetings, most of which were public and some public hearings, we were granted preliminary consent from the city of Lewis, and that occurred in August of this year. So we were 18 months into the process at this point and behind the anticipated schedule. At the same time, we were informed, or shortly thereafter, I should say, in early September, that a comprehensive plan amendment, which was submitted in August by the city to the state, and that comprehensive plan amendment was necessary in order for the annexation process to begin. That submission was to be withdrawn based on what county council deemed to be an improper submission by the city. The process defined from there was that a public hearing, a joint public hearing between city council and the Lewis Planning and Zoning Commission was necessary in order to hear the public opinion on how this language should look for the comprehensive plan amendment. From there, there were anticipated multiple meetings in order to draft the language and then submission back to the State Plus process in order for that language to be finalized and the comp plan amended. So this has now pushed or would have pushed our annexation public hearings well into 2015. And assuming a favorable recommendation on annexation, we'd then have another probably two-year process for final approval. So we were staring another potentially 3 to 4 years in the face from September. By way of comparison, we submitted a preliminary site plan to Sussex County for a very similar cluster subdivision, 84 lots on about 35 acres, in May of 2013, one month after the initial Harbor Point application was filed with Sussex County. We received preliminary plan approval on that plan in October of 2013, and final subdivision approval in September of 2014, and have now broken ground. So we have an obligation to our client, the landowner, to advise them of what we believe to be the best decision, and risking another 3 years, coupled with the additional expense that would have come along with that that process, market variables that could occur in those 3 years, we decided to withdraw our application from the city process and reinstate our application at the county. So we did go and meet with Mayor Becker to inform him of our decision in September, contacted the Lewis Board of Public Works to verify the utilities that I spoke with you earlier about, and then contacted Planning and Zoning to reinstate this application.
Question, Nick. What's the difference between the plan that was submitted to the Planning Commission in Lewis and received preliminary consent and what's before this Planning and Zoning Commission tonight?
There's no difference other than a minor street width difference.
Same number of lots?
Yes, 69 lot cluster style subdivision, same size.
No change in lot size?
No.
Have you had any meetings subsequent to preliminary consent from the City of Lewis with any state agencies?
Yes, we did meet with SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Office, and to provide a little bit of background on that, as we went through the process, and this project actually did go through the PLUS process multiple times, Some potential archaeological sites were identified because of nearby sites on nearby properties. So we took it upon ourselves to commission a phase one archaeological survey, which was performed by Dr. Edward Otter, a very well-respected archaeologist. And he completed that phase one survey. In short, he failed to find any concentrations of historic or prehistoric artifacts on the property and concluded that no additional work was necessary. SHPO subsequently requested a meeting to discuss this report, which we agreed to. That meeting occurred in late November of this year. In the meeting, they did request additional testing, which we did not agree to, as we felt that Dr. Otter's report was well done. He was able to defend his report, and that was more than sufficient for us. That said, we understand that if anything is encountered during the site work process, should this move forward, that it does need to be reported.
Have you had any discussions with your immediate neighbor to the south, the Canary Creek subdivision, about this project?
Yes, we've had actually ongoing discussions with the Canary Creek Homeowner Association and specifically the president of that association, Doug Spellman. There are three issues which are have been identified by the association as major issues. The first of which is an interconnection issue. There was a condition that was placed on the Lewis preliminary consent for interconnection for emergency and potential pedestrian and bicycle access. That is something they are, as an association, vehemently opposed to, and we would agree that the access is not necessary and doesn't benefit either subdivision. The second issue was an assurance that there is no runoff from the Harbor Point subdivision into the Canary Creek subdivision. And there are obviously multiple controls in place for that, not the least of which is a swale that will separate the two developments. And I've assured them that I think our friends at the Sussex Conservation District would have quite a bit of issue if we were draining stormwater onto their subdivision. And the third major issue that was identified was that a 50-foot buffer be instituted from the rear lot lines of the Harbor Point lots to the property line that separates the two communities, 30 feet of which is to be forested, and we have agreed to do that as well.
Why don't you take a seat, Nick, and I'll bring up Ring to take the commission through his two-volume project booklet. Ring, if you could identify yourself to the commission, please.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is Ring Lardner, professional engineer and principal with the firm Davis, Bowen, and Friedel, 23 North Walnut Street, Milford, Delaware, 19963.
Ring, why don't we begin with a discussion of site conditions?
Absolutely. The map in front of you on the board is in your packet in Exhibit 1 of one of the many maps of the board. The site, highlighted in yellow here, I will try to do both boards, forgive me if I do not. Consists of approximately 108.75 acres of land with 70.52 acres of wetlands and 38.25 upland acres that is currently used for agriculture. The wetlands consists of both state and federal jurisdictional wetlands that was delineated by Environmental Resources Incorporated. The delineation can be found in Exhibit 10, and that delineation was submitted to the United States Corps of Engineers for a jurisdictional determination. And that determination can be found in Exhibit 11, which concurs with the wetlands investigation completed by ERI. We also asked Earth Data Incorporated to do a review of the plans and potential impacts on the local hydrogeological system and surrounding wells. Their report can be found in Exhibit 12 and states, over quote, "The Point Farm subdivision is nowhere near the recharge area for the city of Lewis wellfield," close quotes. And also states, open quotes, "The entire Point Farm project is underlain by an area designated as having good recharge potential," close quotes. And finally, open quote, "It is Earth Data's opinion that a properly designed and thought-out project can reasonably mitigate the potential loss of effective recharge and can also reduce the possibility that contaminants might enter the shallow aquifer, close quotes. The existing parcel of land also includes 76.15 acres of land of woodlands. Parker Forestry Services Incorporated performed a forest stand delineation description, and that can be found in Exhibit 13 of your booklet. All woodlands will be preserved as part of the proposed subdivision. Environmental Resources Incorporated was also asked to perform a threatened and endangered species review, which can be found in Exhibit 14 of the booklet. ERI contacted Deseret Fish and Wildlife and the U.S. Department of Interior Fish and Wildlife to gather their input, and those inputs can be found in Exhibit 15 of your booklet. ERI's review found that, open quotes, no hawk nest or hawks exhibiting nesting behavior were found and observed on the property, and no habitat supporting any rare plant species were observed, close quotes. The review further says there are no proposed impacts of the tidal wetlands, and a 50-foot buffer from non-tidal wetlands exceeds the county requirement of a 50-foot buffer from non-tidal wetlands. And as you know, the tidal wetlands generally occurs before the non-tidal wetlands takes place. So providing 50-foot from non-tidal far exceeds the tidal wetland buffer requirement. And finally, a soils investigation was completed by John D. Hines and Associates in May of 2013. And that report can be found in Exhibit 16 of your booklet. The report provided us with information regarding groundwater elevations to help us with the perimeter layout of the subdivision. The upland portion of this property ranges in elevation from about 12 feet at the Canary Creek border to about 2 feet down at the point. That's 12 feet here, down to 2 feet at the point. The elevation of this property in its current form are similar to the elevations found between the Delaware Bay and Lewis Rehoboth Canal, Savannah Road, and Roosevelt Inlet. This area encompasses residential homes, commercial businesses, open areas, and the ground elevation of the Howard C. Seymour Water Reclamation Plant, which is the City of Lewis's wastewater treatment plant.
Before you go further, can you give us some relative examples of elevation in the area, such as Canary Creek, Pilottown Park, Pilottown Village, and you mentioned the sewer plant?
The elevations at the sewer plant is about an elevation of 4. The elevations in the area described, like I said, ranges from 12 to 2. Most of the open area is in the ranges of 4 and 6. When I get into the subdivision design, Harbor Point will have control fill to bring the elevations to the 100-year floodplain, which would put the property elevation between 12 and 8, which would then match the elevations of the surrounding areas to include the Canary Creek subdivision, elevations Harborview, property surrounding Harborview, Pilottown Village, and the reserves at Pilottown when that project's complete. Moving on to the subdivision itself. Should be the word behind that board here.
You're now in the design phase.
That is correct. Harbor Point is a proposed cluster subdivision consisting of single-family detached units on approximately 108.75 acres of land. This subdivision was submitted as a cluster subdivision, but not as a superior design or for expedited review. Therefore, a yield plan for this project was not completed. However, there are many superior design elements that have been incorporated into this plan. Our cluster subdivision response can be found in Exhibit 6. First thing we did is we marked all the wetlands on the property that was delineated all through here as no-go terrain, not to be developed. In addition, we identified the woodlands not within the wetlands, but were located outside the wetlands as woodlands to be preserved in their entirety. After that, we then provided a 50-foot buffer from the Canary Creek subdivision, as Mr. Hammonds mentioned a few minutes ago. We then used that residual land to begin laying out the streets and the lots, which you see the road layout and the lots. The project consists of over 89.77 acres of land that meets the definition of open space as defined in Chapter 99-5. Of the 89.77 acres, 70.52 acres are wetlands, and the remaining 19.2 acres provides buffers from the wetlands and comprises the central open space of a stormwater management pond and pool and pool house. Over 30% of the open space is contiguous with other open space, and a 50-foot buffer from non-tidal wetlands is included, which exceeds both the 50-foot buffer requirement from tidal wetlands and a 25-foot buffer from non-tidal wetlands under a superior design submission. The upland area consists of 38.23 acres of land, again of which 19.25 acres will remain as open space, or approximately 50% of the upland area will be open space. Minimum lot size is 8,250 square feet, which exceeds the minimum size of 7,500 square feet that's allowable under a cluster subdivision. The gross density of the project is 0.63 units per acre, and using the upland density only, it is 1.80 units per acre. The roads will be privately maintained and designed to meet or exceed the Sussex County Private Road Standards and Specifications. Sidewalks will be constructed on both sides of the street, and the active open space consists of a pool and pool house. The preliminary plan includes a schematic of the pool and pool house, and the configuration and size may change. The subdivision will be served by the City of Lewis Board of Public Works for sanitary sewer, drinking water, and electric service. A willing and able letter from the Board of Public Works can be found in Exhibit 19. The subdivision includes a 50-foot buffer for Canary Creek, of which 30-foot will be forested, and the other 20-foot will be used for the swale to prevent the runoff from Canary Creek or from Harbor Point onto Canary Creek. The existing hedgerow will be incorporated into the 30-foot forested buffer, and we will augment that hedgerow to meet the 30-foot forested buffer requirement. The swale will be designed to meet and or exceed DENREC standards and specifications. In addition, the stormwater management design will meet or exceed the requirements of the sediment and stormwater regulations. This design will include a traditional wet pond, as shown in the middle, for both stormwater and amenity purposes, and also green technologies such as biofiltration swales. A majority of the upland area is located within the floodplain, as depicted on the current FEMA map. The proposed grading meets and or exceeds the requirements of Chapter 115, Coastal and Floodplain Area Protection, and a copy of our compliance can be found in Exhibit 8. The current base flood elevation is between elevation 10 and 9. The roads and lot grades will be designed to be 1 foot above the floodplain elevation to thus provide 1 foot of freeboard. The homes will not have basements, and the crawl space elevation will be located 1 foot above the floodplain elevation. Thus, the crawl spaces would have a foot of freeboard as well. The proposed design meets and or exceeds FEMA and county design standards for construction in the floodplains. We are aware that FEMA is currently updating the floodplain maps in Sussex County and anticipate the county council will adopt them in 2015. This project will use the approved FEMA map at time of final engineering approval to establish the 100-year floodplain elevation and base elevations. The developer completed a traffic impact study and submitted the study on March 7, 2014. DOT reviewed the report and submitted a response on March 27, 2014, and a copy of their response can be found in Exhibit 20. The developer is required to construct a standard hammerhead entrance onto Park Road. That's that one there. And they're required to improve Park Road from Samantha Drive to the south side of the causeway to meet local road standards. Canary Creek Subdivision did Park Road from New Road to Samantha Drive. Denver Parks and Recreation did the causeway to the new connection out on Palatown Road, and thus Harbor Point has the final piece to improve. As far as county code compliance, this proposed subdivision provides a 20-foot forested buffer as required by county code. The existing woodland will be used to meet the forested buffer in the areas, and in areas such as near Canary Creek Subdivision that are less than 20 foot, we will be augmenting by landscaping to meet the forested buffer requirement. Also, the residual piece of Harbor Point is used for agriculture use and is required to have a 50-foot agriculture buffer. Again, that buffer is located within the wetland and existing wooded areas. The proposed project was reviewed by PLUS on February 7, 2013. We reviewed their comments and responded on April 8, 2013, and that response can be found in Exhibit 3. The project complies with all elements of Chapter 99-9C. We have included a written response as Exhibit 5 in the presentation booklet and believe we have covered all those components thus far in our presentation. In summary of Chapter 99-9C, the subdivision is integrated into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape, preserves all wetlands, woodlands, natural and historic features, provides 89.77 acres of open space and is compatible with other land uses. In addition, we've also completed the environmental assessment and public facility report, and a copy of that report can be found in Exhibit 7. Again, in summary of that report, the subdivision will not negatively affect stormwater quality and quantity. It is served by a public utility for water and sewer, preserves all wetlands and woodlands, and provides 89.77 acres of open space. That includes 19.25 acres in the upland area.
All right. You did not talk about the environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone. You want to hit that just quickly?
Sure. The environmentally sensitive developing overlay zone is an overlay zone with the environmentally sensitive developing area. It is a developing area that's been identified in the comprehensive plan.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask you one more time. Okay, we're conducting a public hearing. If I can hear you, I cannot hear him. I need to hear him. I do not need to hear you. Go ahead.
You're good.
Okay.
All right.
You're
good.
Moving right along. Let's talk about the development next door, Canary Creek.
Yes, sir.
You tell us about that development in terms of how it compares to this one?
Canary Creek subdivision was originally 75.22 acres of land. Through various discussions and negotiations, the developable area became 30.61 acres of land. In that 30.61 acres of land, there was 16.06 acres of open space, again, approximately 50%, and included 102 lots. 30 were single families, 72 were townhouses, with lot sizes of 5,000 square feet for single families and 2,500 square feet for townhouses.
Were there any wetlands or any other matters of significance on that site?
That site consisted of numerous acres of wetlands, archaeological sites. Those wetlands, some were deeded over to the state, some were deeded over to the city of Lewis, as well as the archaeological sites.
Thanks. Why don't you take a seat, ring, and we'll bring Nick back. Nick, I want you to talk a little bit about the economic impact of this project, school impact, the benefit to Board of Public Works, and so on.
Sure. So from an economic impact standpoint, as with any development, and specifically residential development, there is a positive, typically, economic impact, both a recurring impact and a one-time impact. With respect to recurring impact, we've estimated about $230,000 between ongoing property taxes and resales in the future after the initial lot transfer. So transfer tax on that, we anticipate about $230,000 annually on an ongoing basis. The one-time benefit's also very significant. There's the initial transfer tax, and if it does happen to be developed as a builder tie-in community, there's the initial transfer from developer to builder of the lot, and then ultimately the transfer of the lot home package from the builder to a third party. So you effectively can double dip, so to speak, on the transfer tax. When you look at that, based on what we believe these homes will sell for, you're about $1 million on the initial transfers to Sussex County. Additionally, there's about $175,000 of income between county inspection fees, plan review fees, and building permit fees. Gene mentioned BPW. So there's water and sewer impact fees of roughly $6,800 per unit, and I believe that includes an electric impact fee as well. There's also the inspection fees while those are being installed, and of course the ongoing usage fees in theory and perpetuity. Schools. We do think there will be a minimal impact on schools due to the buyer demographic that we typically have in Sussex County, and specifically that buyer demographic as it relates to a small lot subdivision. Your typical target buyer there is retirees, pre-retirees, and second homes. So people without children or young children, school-age children. If you look at a recent University of Delaware study in the city of Lewis, roughly 3% of the city population was school-aged children. So if you apply that logic to this subdivision, you're looking at a very small number. And if you look at the property tax, as everyone here knows, the bulk of property tax that's paid by these homes goes to the school district. So that more than offsets any minimal impact from a student population standpoint.
Let's talk about the impact on property values in the area and the market you foresee.
From a property value standpoint, I think it's very positive. One thing that we've done with this subdivision and try to do where we can on subdivision designs is avoid back-to-back lots and enhance what I'd call premium lots. So as you can see on this subdivision, you have the perimeter lots that back the wetlands with substantially nice views, and then you have the interior lots that back to a wet pond, which typically garners a premium, and then the final lots will back to the substantial buffer that we spoke about, the forested buffer between the subdivisions. So from an attractiveness of lot standpoint, I think this subdivision has it all, and I think property or sales prices will start in the 600s and escalate up from there. If you look at that as compared to the single family home sales in the Canary Creek subdivision, which are also very nice, those are in the mid fours to high 400s. So I think it will have a positive impact on property values. Market conditions right now, as Gene asked, are very good in well-located subdivisions. Within, I'll call it, 5 miles of the beach, the market is extraordinarily hot, and specifically east of Route 1. From an example standpoint, we're developing a project right now off of Gills Neck Road in Lewis called Senators, and we have transferred 140 lots over the past 24 months to our builder. So if that's any indication, we are in a very good residential real estate market right now in that area.
Nick, you're familiar with the conditions attached to the preliminary consent from the Lewis Planning Commission?
Yes.
What can you tell the commission about what you've done with those conditions on this project?
Sure. We have reviewed those conditions and are able to accommodate all the substantive conditions with the exception of one, which was the emergency access through Canary Creek development that I mentioned earlier. And like we said, we don't necessarily see a benefit to any interconnection with the Canary Creek development, and as I've stated, and you may hear in the future, the Canary Creek Homeowner Association is vehemently opposed to any interconnection of the two developments.
Thank you. With respect to that one issue, gentlemen, I just observe I have a real difficulty with what amounts to an after-the-fact amendment of someone's final site plan, which is what interconnection would mean to Canary Creek. That project has been approved for a long time. There are a lot of homes there and a lot of residents. And I think it may be simply illegal for the city to try to impose a condition on a site plan it approved years ago and a project it permitted to be developed. That said, that's just my view. From the project booklet and what you've heard, we think this project is consistent with the state strategies map. This is in level one, level three. It's consistent with the county comprehensive plan, the AR1 zoning classification, the subdivision ordinance, the cluster ordinance, the environmentally sensitive developing district overlay ordinance. And remarkably, it is exactly the same 69-lot subdivision that received preliminary consent from the city of Lewis. You have our proposed findings of fact and conditions. We're glad to answer any questions you have.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions, and we'll start with Mr. Burden.
All right. Well, recognizing that you're the attorney and Ring is the engineer, I'll ask Ring some questions. You mentioned the swale that divides Canary Creek from Harbor Point. That's a man-made?
It's a proposed man-made swale that will be designed as part of the overall stormwater management plan of the site.
And where will that drain to?
That will drain south into the wetlands, the Great Marsh. It will drain from north to south in this direction.
Okay, and then it will be on the The swale will be on the harbor point side of the buffer?
That is correct. So it'll be a lot line, swale, then 30-foot forested buffer. So you will have a forested buffer between the lot line, the swale, and Canary Creek.
Okay. And there's no other plan. I'm assuming that that's a wetlands area on the backside.
This is all wetlands here. There will probably be a biofiltration swale here. We just have not gotten into that type of level of design at this point in time, but that's just looking at proposed grading we looked at as part of our application and the surrounding topographic areas. That's what we believe the stormwater will consist of. And we'll find out, should the commission act favorably, when we get into that level of detail.
The amount of fill, how much do you anticipate with the amount of fill coming in there? You got 2 feet to 12 feet. What's your thought
it's
on that?
It's going to be a significant amount of fill. Some of that will come from the excavation of the stormwater management pond as part of that fill. With crawl spaces, you don't need to fill as much because the crawl space handles some feet of the fill. Elevation 2 is back here. But the fill is concentrated in this area here. I've not run what that volume is. That volume analysis will be done as part of the subdivision design to determine that, but there will be some fill required for the site. I just don't know the amount of fill that would be required at this time.
Yeah, but you don't see any reason to bulk it up at the lower points.
No point in coming all the way down to the point. We tried to concentrate everything here as best we could, meeting the 7,500 square foot lots, meeting 50 foot right away, stormwater management, and also trying to provide open space for everybody so we didn't have back-to-back lots.
Okay. Thank you. And then the 50-foot, you're proposing a 50-foot buffer around the entire site or just on the one side?
That county code requires 20-foot forested buffer for the entire perimeter of the site. Because this will remain agriculture, technically we need a 50-foot buffer from the ag use. So the 50-foot, 20-foot will be here. And on this side, particularly where we border Canary Creek, will be a 50-foot buffer in lieu of the 20-foot required buffer, 30-foot of which will be forested.
You mentioned that you would mark the wetlands. How are you planning on doing that?
Right now there's flags, but there could be signs of some way to distinguish that. That was something the Lewis Planning Commission brought up. We have not figured out how we would truly delineate it. I do know that based on the fill, you will know when your lot ends because your lot will quickly fall off to tie back into the wetlands. So that is one non-marked demarcation, but there could be a way of marking it with some signs or some way to identify where your property line truly ends versus the open space.
But you have a plan on marking it somehow so that there isn't planning?
Yes, sir. And we can include that as part of our final plan application.
And is Park Road a – who owns Park Road? Is that a public road?
Parts of it. Park Road is public. Park Road is currently public to here. The rest of this, and this is the old configuration behind it, is currently under the ownership of Denrec Parks and Recreation. We have had three conversations with Denrec Parks and Recreation and DelDOT on the transfer of that land to a public use so that it could be publicly used, not only for Harbor Point, but also for others to use. And that conversation is ongoing as we speak, has not been finalized, because the departments have not figured out how they want to handle that with the future maintenance of that roadway.
But you are currently going to bring it up to the standard that coming into Canary Creek is?
That is correct. So this section of roadway between Causeway and Samantha Drive will be designed and built to DelDOT standards and specifications. The portion of Park Road that was done by Denrec is about 90% of DelDOT standards and specifications. We will be 100% DelDOT standards and specifications for that portion of Park Road, as is the beginning of Park Road from New Road to Samantha. This is 100% DelDOT standards and specifications.
and you're going to bring it to 100% of Deldot from Samantha Road to
the causeway.
But then if you make a left out of Samantha Road, there'll be no road improvements from there to the University
of
Delaware.
This is Samantha. So if you make a left on Samantha, it'll be Deldot standards and specs to get to the causeway, and after that it was however Denrek built their improvements.
At this time, I have no further questions.
All right, so Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And gentlemen, the exhibit booklets that you provided us goes into great detail about your responses to PLUS and various other things. I have in front of me the letter that was submitted by the City of Lewis dated October 14th. Have you had an opportunity to review that?
That would be the letter from the mayor attaching the preliminary consent from the Planning Commission.
Right, about the resolution from the Planning Commission?
Yes, sir.
And have you addressed the various issues that are raised there? It looks as though there's at least 21 different issues that perhaps they raised.
Are you talking about the resolution?
The resolution, yes.
Okay. In the resolution, similar to Sussex County, in Chapter 170 of the City Code, they have 21 items that has to be addressed for a subdivision. Of those 21 items, Sussex County has 17 items as part of 99-9C. 16 of those 17 items are within these 21 items. So what the commission is doing when they did this resolution was identify how we addressed the 21 items that were in Chapter 170. You just have what 99-9C, it only has 17 of those items. So yes, we've addressed them, and they were identified here within the resolution. And there were some things that we do have to go back and should have gone through Lewis. They wanted some additional information because the level of detail just isn't there at a preliminary plan level.
And I know it's because parts of what have been raised throughout the materials that I reviewed and concerns raised has to do with flooding.
Yes, sir.
And could you reiterate for the commission and the benefit of the public how this development will address the issues of flooding?
Harbor Point, the upland area Harbor Point, will be developed at or above the 100-year floodplain elevation as permissible by county code and FEMA. In addition to that, we are committed to building a foot above that floodplain elevation, which will provide a foot of freeboard for that so that Harbor Point itself does not flood in the post-construction condition. And as such, should future homeowners decide to do so, they could actually amend the FEMA floodplain map and pull their lots out of the floodplain if they so choose based on post-construction conditions.
So largely it's going to be addressed through bringing in fill to raise the...
Which went to Mr. Burton's question about the fill. There will be some fill required to make that construction possible. Yes, sir.
Okay. I've also, in reviewing the materials, encountered on more than one occasion the issue of sea level rise and the impact that it could have on this subdivision, given that it's obviously surrounded pretty much by wetlands and closer bodies of water. How might sea level rise impact?
Sea level rise will impact Harbor Point same way as it will impact the rest of the city of Lewis. If sea level rise occurs, and there's numerous studies out there, it's going to impact not only us but the entire city of Lewis, because the entire city of Lewis shares the same elevation Harbor Point does. Our portion of sea level rise planning is the foot of freeboard above that 100-year floodplain elevation, so there's built-in adjustments for sea level rise within the project. Sea level rise is not new in discussions, but there's no state requirement of how to address everything else. The common theme is address sea level rise, but there's been no guidance from the state without everything else, so it's something we're all dealing with sea level rise. But the way we've been able to address is by providing that foot of freeboard. That is our way of handling the sea level rise within Harbor Point, because that's all we can truly affect with this project.
And, you know, we all are very well, I'm sure all of us are very well aware of the problems with New Road and the flooding that we have, and including the most recent time I went down to visit the property, although I'm very familiar with it before this public hearing. Are you aware of any efforts on the part of the state or anyone else to address the issues of the flooding of New Road and especially the little bridge that we have over there?
No, sir. We've had about four or five different conversations with DLDOT over time, and nothing has come up in conversation about New Road or the bridge over Canary Creek or what the state intends to do with it.
Because obviously, you know, that not only does it impact your subdivision that you have before us, but obviously, you know, that whole area.
That is correct.
So it's not just you that are unique to that. I know there's some discussion, or there was some discussion, or some information in here about the height of the buildings that you're wanting to build. You know, obviously the county has one limit. City of Lewis has another. What's your intention in terms of the height of the houses?
I'll let Mr. Hammond speak to that. So you know, I believe, and Nick, you correct me if I'm wrong, the City of Lewis building height limit is 30?
It's 34 or 35 in that area, and we do plan to have the flexibility at least to go to 42 feet, you know, if the market calls for that.
And given that it sounds like you're going to be tapping into the City of Lewis's services, you know, the water, the sewer, the electric, what, if any, benefit remains for the subdivision to be annexed into the City of Lewis?
You know, there's certainly a tax benefit to the city, but we're...
To the benefit of the subdivision. Why would the subdivision want to be annexed into the City of Lewis later, and if so, why?
It is not the plan currently. We're designing to county standards, and we are tying in to the city utilities, as you said. There will be the benefit to the Lewis BPW, but that is not necessarily the intent at this point.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I don't have any further questions at this point.
All right, then, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, at this time, between what I've learned from these exhibit books and listening to the applicant, I'm going to yield my question time at this point.
Mr. Ross?
Just one point of clarification, I guess. You proffered sidewalks are required on one side of the street in the cluster, but you're saying that sidewalks on both sides of the street are your plan, and the sidewalks on the second side is part of your superior design. Is that correct?
Correct. We're providing sidewalks on both sides of the street. We didn't submit this as a superior design, but we are providing sidewalks on both sides of the street.
I think that may be a more demographic and a market decision, Mr. Ross. If you heard Mr. Hammond's, his testimony was that this is a 55 and older or nearing 55 community, at least that's the plan. And the decision was made that sidewalks on both sides of the street was appropriate.
Well, as you know, Mr. Byard, you know, we've had some requests to remove sidewalks from different subdivisions, and some of them have been cluster subdivisions where the applicant has said, well, they were not part of the superior design, and so that was the rationale that they weren't absolutely necessary. They were just proffered, and so I want to make sure that we have some clarity so that we don't run into this issue in the future.
This is purely voluntary, Mr. Ross.
Thank you. No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
All right, then. Mr. Lang?
Only one question there. You made reference early on, there's a difference between the streets in the city versus the streets in the county specs. Can you just give us that difference?
City of Lewis requires, per code, city street widths of 38. I'm on the record, too. 38 feet in width. They also have a payment section specification of a structure number to meet. With the county standard specification, we're proposing 22 feet in width, pavement to pavement, which actually exceeds the county standards, and using the pavement section as defined in the Sussex County standard specifications, which the typical section, Mr. Lank, is on the preliminary plan for reference.
Is the proposed sidewalks to be within the right-of-way or outside?
Within the right-of-way. So you have 11-foot travel lanes, 2-foot curb and gutter, 5-foot grass strip, 5-foot sidewalk, and there should be a couple feet left over after that, if my math is right.
Is it going to be with rolled curb?
Yes, sir. Suburban roll curb.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Abbott.
No questions.
Counselor?
No questions at this time, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, before we move on, just one follow-up question to Mr. Lank. Mm-hmm. In your design, are you providing for any off-street parking?
Two spaces per unit for the house. And I'm not going to, I don't know what the home builder is. If we use Canary Creek as an example, they have more than two off-street spaces per lot, and also when you include the garage. So I'd imagine there's going to be about three, but I can't state for sure without knowing who the home builder is and what they plan on constructing as a house. But minimum of two off-street spaces.
Off-street?
Yes, sir.
You're talking about in the driveway?
Driveway and or garage.
How about any on-street parking?
No on-street parking is proposed.
So if you're marketing to 55-plus and they happen to have Thanksgiving dinner and they bring in their kids and their grandkids and everybody's driving a car, where are they going to park?
They would park on the street. We're not prohibiting on-street parking. We're not providing anything off the 11-foot path. They could park up on the curb or the grass strip to get out of the passageway so that emergency apparatus can still navigate the roadway, and hopefully they never have to navigate the roadway for an emergency use.
Okay. Anything else? All right then, gentlemen, if you'll take a seat nearby,
we'll see
if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. I suspect there might be one or two. All right, ladies and gentlemen, now it's your turn to talk. And is there anyone here who would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2013-4, Jack Lingo Asset Management, LLC? All right, then. Is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2013-4? Okay. Is there anyone here representing a group? Is anyone who is speaking for a group? All right, then. There being none, we'll start all the way in the back, sir.
He's speaking for a group.
Who is speaking for a group? You are. Come on up. Then you're first. Those speaking for a group go first, and then everybody else can speak thereafter, and we'll stay as long as it takes.
Doesn't matter which.
It doesn't matter. They're both going to pick you up.
Okay. My name is Richard Moore from Lewis, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Lewis Community Partnership and many residents who provided their input previously and additional input subsequently. And I would also recommend that all of the comments that were submitted to Lewis, if they would forward those to you, it would probably be helpful. I'd like to start out with the comment about economic impact. I have 8 points, the first being the economic impact proposition. And I'd like to raise the issue that they did not address the potential economic liability. The economic liability can arise if this is approved with known conditions of climate impact. And that would take me to the second point, which is safety. They've referred to the various efforts to address climate in terms of sea level rise and so forth, but they didn't mention that there's only one route out of this development. That route is Park Road. And I'm going to come to Park Road as a later point, but I just want to, at this point out the safety issue. The safety issue is evacuation. Because of the impacts of sea level rise and so forth, there's a very likely stranding of people who live in any development that's been built there, because they would have to go out through a single route along Park Road, assuming that doesn't flood. And then they have to go to the opposite side of Lewis because there's only one exit route from Lewis in the case of a serious storm. And that's the elevated Route 9 coming out from the ferry area. That would mean that all the cars attempting to evacuate from there are going to jam onto a single roadway along with all the traffic that has to evacuate from Pilottown and so forth, because none of it can go up New Road during an evacuation, because it will be flooded. So there's a fairly serious safety issue. There's a fairly serious sea level rise issue, all of which can impact the properties built there, which can then in turn create the potential future liability should sea level rise, in fact, follow the most likely scenario under the most recent IPCC report, which is a 1 meter rise, which is a permanent rise in sea level. That permanent rise will indeed impact everything in Lewis, as they stated. And that's precisely why those of us who live in Lewis have been trying to prevent precisely this kind of development. That brings me to the point of the ecology. This development is being situated directly at the Great Marsh. Literally, you walk off the development and you walk into the Great Marsh. That in and of itself is going to produce an impact. They discussed that they're going to be assuring no stormwater runoff into Canary Creek, but they haven't said the stormwater runoff into the Great Marsh. They haven't said the stormwater accumulation and so forth that builds up, that combines with the sea level rise and so forth, and what happens with that. They also haven't talked about what happens when we have any event like Sandy. And I would advise talking to residents of Lewis who live in proximity to that area, who observed a wave washing across the Great Marsh toward their houses, and talk to some of the people who had structural damage to their house during that storm. And oh, by the way, our mayor, our former mayor, could weigh in on that because he had to repair some of it, he being a contractor who does that kind of work. So there are witnesses here who can attest to precisely what kind of adverse impact that could occur in that area to those houses, and then complicating the further adverse impact to all the surrounding area. So that goes into the economic impact issue in the form of potential liability which you incur as a county approving a development of this nature. I'd also like to mention under the heading of ecology that there are...
I'd like to hear more about this liability. What liability is being created, and I'm not quite following you.
The issue of liability is what happens if you approve projects and you haven't fully contemplated if people moving into that development ask, what consideration did you give to the environmental impact of climate, et cetera, on our houses when you approve this development? Can we then sue you? And I would suggest that's an unsettled legal question at this point. You can't say that there is no environmental, is no economic liability for approving this when you have the information on the impacts of climate change and so forth. Those are cases that, in fact, are going through some courts. It's an unsettled question, but you could be incurring, which means you're incurring it on behalf of all of us who live in the county. In the ecology, they mentioned the species, but they didn't mention, I believe, the species that are actually identified in the PLUS report. And I would suggest they should have gotten another PLUS report for this submission, although they say this is exactly the same proposal. There were issues raised in the PLUS report that perhaps haven't been fully addressed. So under the heading of protected species, for instance, there are at least three bird species that I didn't hear them mention. They mentioned what they did look at, where they didn't see potential habitat, but they didn't mention what the impact on the identified species would be, nor any of the other wildlife habitat issues raised in the PLUS report. They did talk about the wetlands, but they really didn't talk about the fact that they're talking about having in the middle of this development, I believe, I'm not sure which map shows it, I believe in that one, there's a storm water pool that they're proposing in the middle of the development. Now that creates all kinds of interesting questions. First of all, if you think about the way that area is situated, underneath, not far down in fact, and I believe it's in the material they gave to you, they talk about how far down do you go until you get to the clay lens. The clay lens, which sits above the, you know, not bedrock, because that's about, what, 75 feet down, but areas which are full of water. which create hydrostatic pressure, which pushes up underneath that clay lens. So what happens when you get increasing pressure from sea level rise, increasing pressure from the storm water coming down in a storm? All of that builds up, and it can flood from beneath. A group of us from Lewis paid a visit to the state geologist and his team and had a demonstration of precisely that phenomenon. So I would recommend that you invite in the state geologist and ask him directly what kinds of risks are there to this development and specifically in that location. Ask him also to show you the maps they've done, where they have a little dial you can move up and down that shows what happens at various levels of surge during a storm, and see how much of that entire proposed development will in fact flood, because that data is there. Floodplain, triple threat. You can flood from below, you can flood in from the great marsh areas, and you can flood from above because there's water coming down, which will fill that pool, because that pool is not draining out. In fact, it's inappropriate for this kind of development. It's inappropriate for coastal zone areas. It's really intended for higher elevations, because what those kinds of pools do is they slow the rate at which the water moves back into areas that can flood further, such as Canary Creek. But what happens in this instance is it's being contained right there, and in a storm, it will simply overflow. So you got three sources of flooding, and you're building all the housing right around a central risk. The LBPW. I'd suggest that you examine carefully the documents from the LBPW and see if it guarantees that they will, in fact, hook up utilities. Because I do believe their normal assurance is if it's annexed, they will hook up. It's not clear to me, nor did they speak to, what if it's not annexed? Will LBPW, in fact, provide utilities? Park Road is, in fact, an area that DNREC doesn't have the authority to approve. That authority comes from the Delaware OMB. And so far as I'm aware, they have not granted it. And that would then further require action by the state legislature. There are others who are more expert on that point, but I raise it for your consideration, because without that assurance, they won't have even that single access road in. Sussex County Comprehensive Plan, as I understand it, calls for protecting as much open space as possible, protecting as much agricultural land to be preserved as possible, and a variety of other things that suggests that this is not a site that should be developed. The difficulties they encountered in Lewis, in fact, were because this plan would directly violate the Lewis Comprehensive Plan, the existing plan, which has it identified in an annexation area, and which specifically says that if it's annexed, and if there's development there, because it doesn't recommend development, if there's development there, that the lot sizes be 2 to 10 acres. And I believe under the zoning for the county, the lot sizes are considerably larger than they're proposing, perhaps by a magnitude of 10 times. So what they're proposing doesn't fit either the Lewis Comprehensive Plan or the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. And with that, I would end my comments. Thank you.
All right, then. Well, thank you, sir. Mr. Byard, I'd like you, someone from your team to address the availability of utilities and what the arrangement is or isn't with the city of Lewis.
We do have a will serve letter from the City of Lewis Board of Public Works, in addition to confirmation in writing that we have done what is necessary for utility service.
So it's not dependent on annexation?
It is not.
Okay, thank you. Okay, who's next? Take the lady in the navy sweater, red collar, come on up.
I brought her trash with her. It's not really trash.
You hope it's not. If should this be passed around?
I'll take it. Yeah, if you can, Mr. Blank, please.
All right. You're trying to get rid of my trash.
Are these duplicated copies, ma'am?
There are copies for each person on it.
All right, thank you.
This should be open up to both sides. I brought an aerial map. Do I have to speak here or can I speak over there?
Actually, give us your name.
Okay. I'm Marianne Ennis, and I'm 50 Harborview Road in Lewis.
Okay, and if you wish to speak from over there, we need you to speak loudly.
Okay.
So the issue is that you're being recorded, and it needs to pick you up.
Okay.
But if you speak loudly, and that mic's turned in your direction, it should pick you up.
I'll come back here.
You'll be fine. You're fine.
The reason I brought this was because this is an aerial map, and I know you have seen what they have. And probably most of you have been to this area in Lewis. And this is the Roosevelt Inlet, if you're familiar with that. And this is the Great Marsh. This is the turbine, a beautiful illustration of a turbine. And here we have, full with homes, Harbor Point. And this is where the development will be. You can see it looks like it's surrounded by water. And very frankly, if you are at the Roosevelt Inlet, which is right here, and you were on a ship, right across from you is the entrance to the university's road that actually it's not universities anymore, but it goes, surrounds the university and continues on and is part of what they call Park Road, which is part of the park. That park, just for a matter of information, it was bought through the Open Space Council through the efforts of the community there. And with the help, certainly, of our representative, but we lobbied for that, and when the university was trying to sell their land off, we kind of got together, and this was a great purchase of over 200 acres of parkland, and this development, Harbor Point, is off this particular area of parkland. So anyhow, we're at the bay here, Delaware Bay, coming across the road. You can see this road here. You probably can't over there, but you can probably see the turbine. So you're going to go up the road, and that's Park Road. If you are in the bay, it looks like your boat's going to float right across the road. And actually, it might in a few years, because this is supposed to be, believe it or not, the Great Marsh. It's water a good bit of the time. And this park, the point of development, is surrounded by water most of the time. Here's another view looking down. This dark area is Harbor Point, or will be Harbor Point. I guess you're wondering what the red and white is. Somebody said that's called Mount Floodmore, because if they put 12 feet of dirt and a 40-foot building, those houses are going to stick out over the trees, which has a maximum height of about 40 feet. So you'll see a bunch of houses sticking above the trees when you're over here on the causeway, looking across over at Harbor Point. If you are on the causeway, which I was there, and looking back towards the homes of some of the people here, this particular home, identified with the circle, ends up to be this blue home. And as you see, we're on the causeway, looking down, and there are three large white pipes with a diameter of about 3 feet. There used to be one there before the new causeway was built. 3 feet. And the reason the pipes are there is because there's so much water that comes in here. Imagine Sandy, the water from Sandy, coming in here, which it did, fills up the marsh, goes in here and around here into Canary Creek, and it fills this area up. So the pipes have to relieve some of that pressure by allowing the water to go back under the causeway, and that water goes into the rest of the marsh, where homes are. Now we're up here. We're not even on the floodplain. These folks we're on Harborview. This is Hornkill. This is Rodney. And these folks have already been impacted by this water. Around the corner here, around Harborview, you follow Canary Creek. And you'll see on the other side of this pictures of Canary Creek. Canary Creek Bridge has been built in recent years, within the last 10 years, and the road near Canary Creek Bridge has been built. But it is not accessible. I think, as you mentioned, it's flooded most of the time. New Road, which is on across this Canary Creek, is our evacuation route. That's the evacuation route for that side of Lewis. Obviously, it's not a good choice. I didn't come here today to say don't develop this development. I came here to say put it in a different place. I'm going to read my statement since I'm such a terrible speaker. It's better to listen to what I wrote. What I have in front of you is a little packet of information so you can see where Harbor Point is. There's the Harbor Point is outlined in red. Next to that, outlined in blue, is Canary Creek. What's outlined in green is one-third of the area that Canary Creek developers donated for the high density of Canary Creek. That's why Canary Creek is a very densely developed site. Developers developed actually on about one-third of their area. The green area that you see on this little map has been donated to the city of Lewis as open space in perpetuity. Why was that done? Because the community group met with the developers for many, many times. And Sussex County has an atmosphere and an ambiance of rural area. If you go along New Road, and if you see the little red dot, which is the Canary Creek Bridge in this particular map, and that road that goes through it is New Road. If you ride down New Road, you see mostly farms. And that's how we wanted to keep it. And in keeping that green site that was donated as open space in perpetuity, that has been a cornfield. And it has been used as a cornfield for many, many, many years. So when you get on New Road, there are a couple houses there, but great open spaces between the houses. It still gives you the atmosphere of a rural Sussex County. Now I will read. I know you're relieved. The topic is Harbor Point is in the wrong place. Zoning density is incorrectly compared. I mentioned about Canary Creek, so I'm not going to read that paragraph. Canary Creek homes are much smaller than the homes in the area. Most of the homes in the area are between 17,000 square feet and 28,000 square feet. Now, if you're using Harbor Point's comparison to Canary Creek for development, that's scary. 7,500 foot lots on that spot, if you're using contiguous developments, think of the thousands of acres along New Road that will be built with that concept. Small 7,500 foot lots along New Road on 1,000 acres multiplied by four lots to an acre. That's a lot of houses.
Just for clarification, that's not how it works. The density remains the same as the AR zoning district. So it's not that because you can fit as many 7,500 square foot lots on an acre, that's as many as you can get. The underlying density still applies, but the lot size is reduced to 7,500 square feet if you have central sewer and some other things. So
yeah, I realize that. It's okay. Kind of a okay. Ballpark, but you can imagine what we're talking about for that. All right. I am concerned about the habitat. Actually, this week, Prince William of Great Britain was in America to raise money and awareness to save world habitat. In an October 12th newspaper article, former Secretary of DENREC, Colin O'Mara, says, "We've seen habitat loss impact the migration of birds and spread of invasive species extend across Delaware's landscape. If we don't take action, future generations may never see a monarch butterfly, or we may not have enough bees to pollinate our crops. Harbor Point is surrounded on its size by the Great Marsh and Canary Creek. 9 to 12 feet of fill dirt will cause an avalanche of pollutants to rush downhill and damage the marine life we depend on as a nursery for our fish's life cycle." That's Mount Floodmore, the red and white. You can imagine all those houses standing above those trees. Flooding. The greatest problem we have, of course, is flooding. This is the PLUS Review quotation, and I don't even know if you have this because it sounds to me like they only left you with the old PLUS Review, not the most recent one, where we have comments from, I think, June 24th. I don't know if you have that one or not. But this is what this particular PLUS Review says. In the short term, sea level rise on this parcel, combined with periodic coastal flooding events, may result in repetitive flood damage to homes within this neighborhood and significant difficulties maintaining stormwater and drainage infrastructure. In the long term, the increased flood and inundation risk could result in costly public and private flood abatement and drainage projects and eventual abandonment of homes. Eventual abandonment of homes. That's in the PLUS Review. That's the most recent one. You have also in the packet I gave you some maps. This one is what the land looks like now surrounding the Harbor Point area. And this one is what it will look like. This is the FEMA preliminary flood map. It's the same site. Unfortunately, I stapled them upside down, so you'll have to kind of twist them around to compare them. However, if you look where I have, this is Harbor Point. You see all the water, and if you look at the legend here, the depths of the water around and on Harbor Point. Now, he did explain to you, I think it was Ring explained to you, about the route over here. Which is the road that you will leave on to go to leave Harbor Point. This goes on to Park Road. If you look at the little blue map, what does that tell you? That little blue map that shows the flooding tells you that that will be underwater. It's already partly underwater. It's raised, that particular site is raised approximately, well, there's a big pipe underneath of it, so it has to be at least 3 to 4 feet already above ground level. But, so we're going to have flooding there. If you look at that site, you'll see that. And you wonder why people come and make fools of themselves like me. Look at the site next to Harbor Point. That's Canary Creek. Look at the blue and the yellow and green there. Do you think people in our town cared that they allowed development in that site with all that flooding? Suppose you bought a home there. You'd be waiting for the next Sandy and or sell your house before that happens. There's flooding there. It's ridiculous. I had said when I started that I wasn't against the development. I'm not against the development, just in that place. I need to show you some more pictures. This is our evacuation route. This is New Road when there was very little rain on it. New Road's cover is crossing Canary Creek, and that's where a lot of the water comes from. This is a little more flooding, which actually covered the bridge across Canary Creek. This home here is very, very recent. It was built right before Hurricane Sandy. The water coming from this area, the water coming from Roosevelt Inlet filled this area, surrounded Harbor Point, came down through Canary Creek, and is inundating her new home. That water has been there since Hurricane Sandy, and it's not all going out. This area here, before the houses, there aren't houses now, but there will be, this area of Harbor Point was a sponge for the city of Lewis. It floods even when there's no rain. It depends on the moon. So it's our sponge. You're going to take that away. You're going to put Mount Floodmore there. It's going to come down and rain, and all the people who live downhill of that will be affected. This house here, we're standing on the causeway now that they showed you, looking down, and there are three pipes. When we went over there the other day, my husband said, "You didn't see that." He said, "There's water bubbling up. There's so much back pressure from here going, now we're on the bridge now, so much back pressure from the water here coming under the causeway that it's going down here. It's going down all the way down here to this little blue house. This is the bubbling. I know you can't see that. But you really have to consider, if you want to put Harbor Point anyplace, Harbor Point should be moved to the other side of the Canary Creek Bridge. Don't allow it on this side. How are people going to get out? And do you really want people to suffer more with the flooding that we're going to have? Keep these. Look at them later on. Mull it over in your mind. Would you want your son or daughter to buy a house there? Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Ennis.
Two things, if I could, for the record. Yeah. Can we keep that board just because we need to keep exhibits for the record, if you don't mind?
I do.
You do mind, or?
Yeah, I do mind. I'll make you a duplicate.
Okay. And the second thing is, we do have the June 25, 2014 plus review letter from the state in the file. It's not in the book. I guess for Mr. Lardner or somebody's response, has there been a response to plus for the more recent letter?
Mr. Robertson, the June 2014 review was required because we submitted an application to the City of Lewis. So Office of State Planning required that plus review for the City of Lewis's application. We did provide a response. That response is based on the City of Lewis application. I will tell you that the review comments are very much the same, except for DNREC has stated since they were reviewing it again a second time, they felt they had to come up with some new comments. Hence, the comment of sea level rise was added to this plus review of which you're hearing about this evening. But if it would please the commission, I can email a copy of that response to Mr. Lank and Mr. Abbott first thing in the morning if you wish to have it for the record. But that was truly responded as part of the Lewis application, not the county's application.
Yeah, well, it would be up to the commission to decide whether to hold the record open after the public hearing. But my thinking would be that since there is that plus submitted by somebody, the June 25, 2014 letter into the record, we should also have your response, even though it was...
I can tell you that I would be in favor of holding the record open to receive that. We need to have any and all correspondence that there relates to the application, so...
I'm suggesting that we have the ability to hold the record open to receive that plus response letter since it's not available to us now, and I'm simply suggesting that that's probably a good idea. Yes, ma'am. Not yet.
Taking in the order that called this lady to come forward.
She's next, and then you can be next. Go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Janice Pinto. I live on Rodney Avenue in Lewis. And I have heard the presentation quite a few times now by the developers. And the first time that I heard them speak at the City of Lewis presentation, they mentioned something about in response to sea level rise. They cited that don't worry about that because Harbor Point development would be 5,000 feet from the Atlantic. The concern for us who live in Lewis downstream of the proposed Harbor Point development is not the Atlantic. At the height of Superstorm Sandy, my neighbor and I were looking out of our second floor bedroom windows, watching the water from the Great Marsh encroaching on the field behind us. We watched and we realized that we were in a position of potential danger. The threat was the water. The water was surging toward us, and then the wind shifted and blew the water back to the Great Marsh. disaster was averted that time. It is not the water from the canal, the Delaware Bay, or the Atlantic Ocean that threatens us. It is the water from the Great Marsh. The wetlands are the buffer and the sponge for the existing Lewis citizens in the Canary Creek development, the homes along Harborview, Hornkill, and Rodney Avenue. Indeed, all of us north of New Road and downstream from the Harbor Point development. And we will be very downstream if they go up an additional 11 foot. In addition, at the height of the winds howling from Sandy, my family heard a very loud cracking noise in our house. Our investigation discovered that one of the five vertical steel support beams in our basement had bent 90 degrees. We quickly propped up the area with a walnut beam that we had in the basement. The following morning, a structural engineer was called and placed three temporary 6x6 beams as temporary supports. The next day, after much of the storm water had receded, the center replaced beam fell over, so shims were added. Again, the next day, that beam fell. The scenario repeated two more times. The conversation between the three builders, the engineer, and myself was there was a strong possibility that hydrostatic pressure from the storm pushed the floor up, bending the steel beam. Subsequently, when the water table dropped, I believe the floor retreated. Nothing, of course, could be proven. I'm not an engineer, but it made more sense that the floor went down rather than the house go up. Neither the engineer nor the three consulted builders had ever seen this phenomenon before. One of the consulted builders was former Mayor Jim Ford. $22,000 later, that's what it took us out of our pockets to fix this, we've recovered. When you're considering placing such impervious surfaces on the fragile marsh, I ask you to please consider those citizens of Lewis who are downstream and what potential danger it poses for all of us. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. All right, sir, what's your point of order over here? You want to come up and ask your question, please? And you're welcome to stay and give your testimony.
Jerry Lecklider, 34 Harborview Road, Lewis, 19958.
Are you the colonel?
I'm the colonel.
You wrote the letter?
I'm the colonel.
Yeah, we're not a quasi-judicial body.
Well, I guess that's a legal determination.
Well, that's my determination anyway.
Oh, that's yeah. Fine. That's fine. I mean,
we're fine too. So, I mean, in terms of how we conduct business.
So everybody can differ, but in the end, it's always a judge who decides.
If you have testimony relative to the...
No, I do.
Okay, well, that's what we're
but
here to
I want
about.
To bring up a couple points of order. Number one, I came over to review the file on December 5th. Mm-hmm. I was given a box that had plot plans in it and loose documents. I did not see the folder. I was not given the folder. I clearly asked, I want to see everything you have on that project.
Okay.
2013-4. I wasn't given the information.
Okay.
So that's one point of order. And then I checked. I saw in the file there was a picture of the notice. I live a walking distance away, and I'm a walker. And I walked there on December 6th, no notice. I walked there on December 9th, no notice. I walked there on December 10th. Yesterday, at the end of the day, about 16:30 hours, no notice. So although there might have been a notice there at one time, for at least five of the 15 days, the public notice was required, there was no notice there.
When you first noticed that the notice wasn't there, what did you do? Did you call the office and say, hey, the sign's
It's not my responsibility.
Sir, you're a citizen of this county. If you see something like that, I would suggest to you that it is your responsibility instead of coming here and telling us, I looked at it five times and didn't see it. And so you're telling me now.
Three times. That's
three times.
It's a point of order.
Well, I'm suggesting to you that it's a point of civic responsibility that when you see that, make a phone call.
That's your opinion. That's not my opinion.
Understood. What's your next point of order? No.
Wait a second.
Stop.
Mr. Wheatley, Chairman Wheatley, we have rules of procedure that govern how these proceedings go. There are rules of procedure that have been in existence for 20 years. We don't allow people to speak from the audience. That's one thing. We've never done that. We allow everybody one opportunity to speak. You can take as long as you want, but you get one opportunity to speak to the commission. If we have any questions, we'll follow up. We cannot allow this to be a situation where people can call out from the audience. Otherwise, we're not going to get good information, nor is the audience. It just falls apart, and we don't go anywhere. So we ask that you, everybody, be considerate of everybody's opportunity to speak. We'll hear you out, and we'll keep moving forward, okay? We're not going to allow any outbursts from the audience or points of order from the audience. If you have a question and it's your opportunity to speak, you can certainly raise it.
The other point was the plot number is wrong. It isn't 1.00. It's 1.01. Pursuant to the annexation process at Lewis, initially it was ruled that they did not have to subdivide from the larger parcel of 635 acres. When the city went to the state with the plan of services for annexation, the state came back and said, sorry, you have to subdivide. So the developer subdivided, and the new parcel number is the same as two preceding numbers and then 1.01.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
So they're the points of order. Now, if you want me to continue, I can.
I do. I want you to continue with relevant testimony.
Can I get my documents?
Sure. Sure.
Thank you.
Hey, Shane, do we have in the file a copy of the site posting date?
It was posted November 12th, signed by the inspector, and a copy of the public notice sign on the site.
And by the way, while we're stopped, it is a concern that if there was a file that wasn't available, was it in use? Was it on somebody's desk? Was everything we had in the box? Did we not have a file?
I don't know what he reviewed at the time. I didn't provide that to him.
Okay.
I didn't see any folder, Chairman.
I'm trying to find that out because
to it as a folder.
Well, what he's saying is he didn't see a folder, and I think we often say to people, come and ask to see the folder.
Well, it typically is a folder. It's in the box.
Yeah,
like
it should have been. Should
I see there?
Yeah. Was
I
that
didn't
in there?
Have that.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. That's the. So you're talking about you did not see the exhibit booklet.
Okay.
Right. I didn't see any of
Thank
that.
You.
No.
Okay. All right, then.
No.
All right. Well, thanks for bringing
that
to our attention.
It was but you should have been.
I asked for a complete file.
Okay. Well, and a point well taken.
Okay. So I want to give you a little bit of history about Canary Creek, because that is an issue. I was part of that group that negotiated that. In 2006, Canary Creek was turned down. That was within the city limits. It wasn't an annexation. It was owned community facilities development. It was owned by BB Hospital and sold to Berry and Campana, two developers. They moved for a comp plan change and a zoning change. Okay. That was turned down in 2006. The city came to our group, some of who spoke here, and said, would you negotiate with Berry and Campano to see if we get a meeting of minds to avoid any contract zoning issue and conditions that you people could agree with. Mm-hmm. So we negotiated the agreement with Berry and Campano. And at that time, we were also talking to the project manager from the same engineering firm, Zach Brown. He was asked numerous times, what are your plans for the parcel to the north, the Townsend land? No plans. We were never told that they stubbed in the utilities. And at the same time, in 2010, Mr. Townsend subdivided a deed which had two parcels on it into two separate parcels. I can't say why he did it, whether that facilitates development or not, I don't know. In any event, this was 635 acres, and when they had a subdivide, the 108 came off. And there are a number of issues that haven't been settled. I'll just say, preface and say, a suit has been filed in the Chancery Court on the easement and the use of Park Road. I don't know if you have the letters in your file from Denrec, and the summary of conversation with Denrec and DelDOT in 2013. And that summary was done by Mr. Lardner. And in that summary, he basically said, and I'll quote, Park Road is to be used for open space and park use and not able to be accessed for other uses to include residential subdivisions. Now, how that was gotten around for Canary Creek subdivision was Denrec built it, had the builder build it to the developer, built it to DelDOT standards. Denrec took it over, transferred it to DelDOT, and transferred it, the city then took over that road. But in taking over that road, the city also took over a portion of Samantha Drive, which is open space, which is a conversion and use of open space under the Delaware Land Protection Act. And that issue is in court right now. So that's being challenged. The easement's being challenged, and the use of Park Road is being challenged. So eventually there'll be a legal decision on who knows how it's going to come out. I don't know. You know, judges make their own decisions. They hear the argument, both sides, and they make a decision. In the state response to the latest plus application, SHPO, the State Historical Preservation Office, was clear and said, request further consultation with the applicant and their archaeological consultant. They considered it inadequate, what was done, to clarify aspects of the recent survey and discuss the potential need for further investigation or monitoring. At a minimum, SHPO recommends that the area of the BB site be avoided with no grading or ground disturbance in that part of the parcel. That's part of the state response dated June 25th, I believe. You should have that, June 25th, 2014. I also went to the OSPC site, and the developer's response is not available there. So I, as somebody wanting to review that response, if you get it, I don't have it, and I don't have a chance to review it, what the developer's response is. So basically, in my submission, which I will give you in writing, it also discusses the BPW services. BPW, by its charter, is permitted to provide services to entities outside of Lewis corporate limits up to 2 miles. Not obligated. The only thing that I saw in the file was a letter from the general manager of BPW to Mr. Mahaffey, who is the Planning Commission chairman, which stated that BPW could and would. Not definite. But it wasn't to the developer, what I saw. And I haven't seen, if there is a letter of that nature, I haven't seen it, because I haven't seen the file. But I want to point out that on August 19th, the developer signed the landowner. It's more important, not the developer, the landowner signed a pre-annexation agreement with the city of Lewis. And it, all the whereases and whereases comes down to if you get annexed, you get services. If you don't, you don't get services. And that, as you can see, is filed, date stamp. you know, and filed with the county in the record. So that's also a question.
I think the answer to that is, at least what's based on the information that's been submitted, is that the BPW has a CPCN for this project, which is governed by state law, and it's regulated by the Delaware Public Service Commission. And in fact, if they do have a CPCN, then they are obligated to serve by state law. So
that's a legal issue, too.
Well, it's in state law, so
it's a legal issue. That's all I'll say.
Not sure what that comment even means. It's right
sir,
in state
sir, it's
statute.
The law. You can call it a legal issue if you want. They're going to get water and sewer if they get approved. That's been decided. So let's move on. What's next?
Okay. Well, whether the applicant has to go through an all the plus process, I give you an email in here from the head of the state office, state planning coordination, and says that they should have gone through another plus process. That I'm just quoting what's in the email. And it's been discussed, so I won't repeat it, whether the zoning of 7,500 square foot lots is appropriate for that area.
Okay.
In view of the flooding and everything. And that's about it.
All right, sir. Well, thank
I'll
you.
Give this to Mr. Lang.
Yeah, you would, please. That'll make his job a lot easier if he can just put that in the record.
Yeah, sure. That's of course.
Great.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Yeah. Let's do that. And thanks for your testimony, and thank you for your service to our country. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Most of the time I'm benefited by my height. This time I need to adjust. I'm Bill Landon, and last time I came before you, I gave you my farm address. So I also have a home in town at 241 Second Street in Lewis. I used to be an avid hunter, and I used to hunt that area quite frequently. I always wore my hip boots when I went in there because the water was very high. My concern here is, and a couple of you hit the issue a little bit, with the Board of Public Works, and I just heard the comment that was made, when you get the bill from the Board of Public Works as a city resident, you get the sewer bill, you get the water bill, and now you get a stormwater bill. Mm-hmm. And so as a resident of the city of Lewis, I'm extremely concerned with this development. Am I now going to get a higher stormwater city bill because of this approval? I would hope not. I would hope y'all will look at this very closely. And a question came up in regards to that bridge on New Road. My neighbor just traded in their car, and they had a Lexus, and they just bought a Mercedes. So maybe that benefited someone around here because it got flooded. It drifted halfway across the road and had to be towed out of there. I'm concerned about New Road, you know, and as we continue to develop along there, you're going to see no shoulders on that road, New Road. It is a primitive road, so to speak, and we're developing and developing. The city just approved a development off Park Avenue there that adds more houses into there. Now we're going to add more when we put this development in there. I would just ask that you look at New Road closely as you approve this project. I also heard the comment about there's not too many changes in regards to what was presented to the city of Lewis versus what's now being presented to you in the county. And when I hear comments like 42 feet high houses, I mean, we have none in the city like that. We're going to be looking like up at big buildings sticking up out into the Great Marsh. It concerns me that they would come to you and then come across like with street changes and all these other things. I would hope that you will look at all these changes that they're making, like height restrictions, street restrictions, all these other things, when you look at what they presented to the city of Lewis, because they did make that comment, there's little or no changes. And in listening to this tonight, I do think there were a few, and there may be a whole lot more. This project reminds me of that song, "My Ex Lives in Texas, and Therefore I Live in Tennessee." Because the city of Lewis, and let me give you an example. The ex
you
would
sing
be
a few bars. I'm not familiar with.
I can't sing. The other night I had my wife here. She's a good singer. I would have brought her along if I'd known you wanted that. But anyway, the ex would be the city of Lewis, and they're not complaining here because they're going to get revenues from the Board of Public Works. I haven't heard any complaints from the city of Lewis. They should have been the first ones up here. And anyway. Thank you for your time, and I'm a retired colonel, too, and I appreciate the comments you made to him.
Well, by golly, thank you for your service to our country as well. Thank you.
Colonel's Night. Okay. All right. You guys both the same service branch or no?
No, he's more detailed, so he couldn't have been. I was the Master of Transportation.
No, I was in the other stuff.
Okay. Yes, sir. Tan Sweater, come on. Well, we're glad you're here either way.
Good evening. My name is Seth Price. I live at 30 Hornhill Avenue, which is at the very end of Hornhill. Probably, as some of you may know, the last half of Hornhill is a bit of an aberration. We're actually in the county, not in the city. It's just one of those little pockets. But the proximity of my property is probably the closest home to where this development is going to be, east of the east of Park Road. And as Janice Pinto spoke to you earlier about, the amounts of water that have been generated coming our way, water flows downhill, and I can only think that part of that is also been exacerbated by Canary Creek. With the redoing of the causeway on Park Road, it has allowed much more water to come our direction. Sandy, I had never seen anything like it, and this was... the house I'm in was the first house on Hornhill and did go through the storm of 62. And even the storm of 62 was not comparable to what happened with Sandy. And all I can attribute that to is this water has no place to go. It is backed up, especially the homeowners on the last half of the road. During Sandy, water was right up lapping people's doorsteps, and that had never happened before. So my concern is With this development, it's only going to get worse. And in the discussion with the flooding and what potentially may happen down the road, and also the character of the county and the city of Lewis with what's being proposed, it's tantamount to opening up a Pandora's box, in my view. There is still a lot of acreage, both county and city, sort of that ring of close to 1,000 acres, which if this precedent of cluster housing is set, it is going to forever change the character, and we're never going to get that back. So thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you, sir. Thanks for sharing. Okay, Mr. Ennis. You have quite a tough act to follow there. As modest as Mrs. Ennis was, she was a rather powerful speaker.
I find myself, sir, in the forum of an unpaid intern tonight.
She perhaps should consider a career in the legislature.
Well, she could serve very well in the legislature, I can assure you of that.
I believe so.
She's not timid. My name is David Ennis. I live at 50 Harborview Road in Lewis, Delaware. But I have been vacationing and spending my summers in Sussex County for 60 years.
Hear, hear.
We have had a home in the town of Lewis since the mid-90s. We've lived here full-time since 2005. We have, as a residential group with Mr. Licklider, Colonel, and others, we have been involved in a number of real estate transactions, including negotiating with a developer for 3 years on the Canary Creek project, in which the result was the donated land that was given to the city wasn't through negotiations by the city, it was through the negotiations of a group called CALL, Citizens Advocating a Livable Lewis, where many of the speakers tonight are part of that group. I would like to share a couple things with you that I think have not been said, and then I may have to touch on one or two things that have been said. One, I'm not sure that you all fully understand that over the last 15, 20 years, the headwaters of the Canary Creek are on the far side of Route 1 behind the Wawa. So everything has been developed along the Canary Creek from behind Wawa and the police department runs down and has been either absorbed or flooded the existing properties until it got down to the Point Farm. The Point Farm was the last sponge. It's been referred to previously as a sponge. It was the last piece of undeveloped land below a new road. And if you take the land there and you cover it with what's going to be put on it, there will be no more sponge whatsoever. And I think it's extraordinarily important that you realize that we are not just suffering from this development's potential harm, we're suffering from years of development upstream that didn't fully pay attention to what was going on downstream. Having said that, because we have worked with the state and others on this project, I'd like to share, I have 4 points of importance. The historic sites along New Road that contain archaeological significant sites have been minimized by the proposed developer. And when they were first raised in the PLUS application from 2013, there was a request made that they make a review, archaeological review, which they contracted with, but they never shared the fact that they had contracted. So nobody in the community knew that they were responding by hiring a consultant. When we, as a group, met with a developer to try and see if there were common grounds, they explained that they had already hired this contractor to examine the archaeological sites. The report from that was then submitted to the state. It's my understanding, because I was not present in any of these meetings, but there was a subsequent statement by the Division of Historic and Cultural Affairs in their PLUS review of the March or the 2014 application that said that there was insignificant investigation in their study. They had to do a more in-depth study. My request to you folks tonight is this. If you are going to keep your record open, I would encourage you to contact somebody in the Division of Historic and Cultural Affairs, ask their opinion about whether there are or are not significant archaeological sites on the Point Farm, not just near it. And if there are, I would suggest and ask you to have the county impose certain requirements. If you choose to approve the project, have the county impose certain standards of further investigation, which I think would be requested formally by the Division of Historic and Cultural Affairs if you ask them for that. Now, I also will tell you that when they withdrew from the application for City of Lewis, I immediately contacted the director of the planning office, the state of Delaware. And in that communication, I said to Ms. Holland, you probably have heard that the developers for Lingo Townsend have withdrawn their application for annexation. Could you tell me what the proper procedure would be for them to proceed? And I asked the question, should they have to submit a new PLUS application? Or are they able to run on the one that they did in 2013 with Sussex County? Or are they able to run on the one that they had submitted to the City of Lewis? Quite frankly, when the statement was made that there's no substantial change, I believe that's inaccurate. Because at a annexation meeting, I was the person who raised the question, can you discuss the annexation of a portion of a single numbered parcel in Sussex County? Because it said the single number and then it said a portion of it. And I asked the question, don't you have to subdivide that property into two properties and then annex the piece you want into the City of Lewis? That's exactly what they did. They did that after their application was submitted to Sussex County and before they submitted it to the City of Lewis, or around the time, they did a subdivision, so they now have two parcel numbers. When we came to look at the box that the colonel referred to, we could not find either PLUS application in the box, so we didn't know what parcel number they were using. But I would suggest to you there's a possibility that the parcel number may be wrong on the application that they are submitting to you folks. And in this instance, I think it was worth, if you do hold the record open, it's also very important that you discuss with Connie Holland her preferences if you had a new application coming from the applicant or if they could run on the one that they did back in 2013. This is her comment back to me. Hi, Dave. Sorry I've been out of the office today and will be in a conference tomorrow. Hope to catch up with you Wednesday. Connie, my first thought would be, yes, they would have to go through the PLUS again because this is a different jurisdiction. That's her comment to me. Now, I will hand you that comment.
If you would give that to Mr. Lane, yep. Please.
What in that, Mr. Ennis, was it clear in that discussion that they were reverting back to a previously filed application? You know, in other words, this one was reverting back to something that was previously filed, not...
Let me read my full statement,
okay,
because it's not that long.
That's fine.
Connie, a quick question about process. As you probably know, the Lingo Townsend Group have withdrawn their proposal for annexation and development of a 108-acre site next to the City of Lewis off of New Road. Many assume they will go back to Sussex County to reapply for the same project, which they had submitted a few years ago. Can you advise, would their original application to PLUS on that same topic still be valid, or would they have to resubmit a new application? Recognizing that the PLUS response to their original application was worded differently, more mildly, than the PLUS wording by the time they got to the City of Lewis project. On some things like cultural affairs and water problems, because the sea level rise report had been completed, the DENREC statement was one of the strongest worded statements I've ever seen in a PLUS report, I must admit. Those are not the kind of words that you usually see in PLUS statements. And then she wrote back that she believed they'd have to do the plus again. That was a quick response. I'll be candid with you. I sent an email this week trying to get a confirmation of that, and we could not connect. But I do think it's important that if you do keep the record open, that you allow opportunity for the State Planning Office to give you their thoughts on whether there should be a separate plus application and whether there should be a further investigation on the archaeological sites. Now, to support the presence and importance of archaeological sites, I'd like to read a short summary from an internet thing. Pagan Creek Dike is a historic causeway located at Lewis, Sussex County, Delaware. It is about 700 feet long, 9 to 10 feet wide at the top, constructed of clay and loam pile atop a sand footing, which rests on a marsh mud. In some places, the dike still rises about 2 feet above the level of the adjacent marsh. It is dated to the mid-late 17th century and is one of the oldest surviving road structures in Delaware. It was apparently built by the Dutch settlers to connect the Dutch West Indies Company fort with the hinterlands beyond Pagan Creek. Pagan Creek is the Canary Creek. And this is from the Wikipedia, and it's the nationally recognized. The National Register of Historic Places acknowledged the Pagan Creek Dike in 1973. This is not on their property. It's on the adjoining land. But the significance is that there are other correspondences from the Division of Historic and Cultural Affairs that said, because the Beebe site, which was found when the Beebe Hospital owned the land, the Beebe site migrated over onto the Point Farm, they suspected and were concerned there could be human burials there. That's a part of a previous communication from the Division of Historic and Cultural Affairs, which I'll be happy to share with you. I don't have it with me tonight. But I think there is significant question about whether the original application that was submitted to the county in 2013 is unchanged. I believe it's substantially changed. And I believe the state's response has also changed during that time period. And I would encourage, if you can, while you're keeping the record open, to let those agencies know. The final comment has to do with the things Mr. Moore spoke about, and that had to do with, I was part of the group that went to see the Delaware Geological Survey, and they showed us an illustrated program that gives you amazing clarity and illustration of what the impact of storm surge will be. But they also said to us, more importantly, that the base water level on this site is so high, it is probable that some of the stormwater ponds that are proposing will be with water all the time, because they may go below the groundwater level. And I would ask if you have the chance or have personnel to talk to the Division of the Delaware Geological Survey on their view about this site as a possible construction site, I would be interested in what they might say as well. I thank you for your time, and I know it's been a very long evening.
Oh, we're just getting started. It's all good. It's all good. Thank you so much for your comments. This site over here has been monopolizing the daylights out of our public comment period. Is anybody over here that would like to speak? Or are you just kind of taking it all in? Okay. All right, they got it all out before. If you change your mind, raise your hand. Anybody else over here wish to speak? Okay, it's going once. Anybody else have a comment that they want to make, put on the record? Twice. You can only come once, one trip. I'm sorry.
I'm relinquishing that because it wasn't mine, but I got permission to relinquish that.
Oh, okay. So we can keep your board.
Thank you.
It's, yeah. We really needed to make it part of the record. We kind of have to keep it. It's you can come visit it if you like. It'll be in the office. It'll be in that file, maybe. Or a box. Actually, it's a little too big for the file. It'll be somewhere. Okay, anyone else have anything? Anything? Any other comments? Okay, anyone on the commission have any questions for the applicants? All right, then. Do we want to do a show of hands this evening?
Probably should.
I think a show of hands would be appropriate. All those in favor, this probably won't take very long. Applicants accepted. We understand that by being the applicant, you're in favor. Okay. Opposed, please. Just one hand, please. One hand to a person, and keep him up there because he's a lawyer, not a mathematician. He might have to take his shoes off. So. And some are just here. Okay.
Lady with the camera, is your hand up or just pictures?
Just pictures.
Okay.
Okay.
16-2. Yeah.
All right, great.
16. Thank you.
16?
Yeah, you put your hands down. We got the count. Thank you.
All right, then. Before we close the public hearing, first want to thank you all for your time and for your patience. It's a very natural response that when we close the public hearing, those of you who are not going to remain, which I suspect is most of you, you get up and you immediately start talking. Well, we're still having a meeting, so it's okay to get up and leave and then start talking is what we would like you to do, okay? So thank you for being here, and we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.